Okay, here we are, hour number two. Lots and lots going on. We're going to posting a truncated short batch of news items in just a couple minutes here, so you can get a good handle on everything. And I'll build that out later on this evening to the full news batch for the day and upload that. Okay, this is the Jeff and Erica Hour, Wednesdays and Fridays. And are you there, young lady?
I am here.
Good, good. be surprised
right
how many
on
times
cue.
I... Yes, she's always there. Never disappointed. Okay, we're going to start with a special guest tonight. And one of the issues that we've talked about for a long time is the really grotesque abuse of patients by doctors, hospitals, nurses in some cases, you name it. Patients are not treated, even I think the great majority of the time, with the kind of care that they expect and they deserve, and they're certainly paying a hell of a lot for in many cases, not all. But there's some really horrific material out there about people who are being flat just almost beaten up for being sick. And we've got one person who's been through that, and she's going to join us now. We're going to talk about her story, and it's pretty outrageous. But she didn't quit, and she persisted with her own efforts and found out that, in her case, red light therapy seems to have made quite a difference, among other things. So we'll find out. Her name is Meg, and I think she's standing by right now. Are you there, Meg?
I am. Hello.
Hi. Hi.
Hi
to Erica. There she is. All right. Good. Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Well, thanks for surviving to be on. I mean, you could have easily not, and then we would never know any of this.
Yes.
So it's pretty crazy.
It's been a tough few years.
Yeah. Okay. In addition to all the other things you're going to hear, Meg, during her last pregnancy, got COVID. Not what you want to get. And we keep telling you over and over again that the injections are absolutely deadly bioweapons in many cases, and so is the artificial, synthetically created, constructed COVID virus. You do not want to get this virus. It's not just like the flu or a bad cold, and you'll get over it and everything's gone back to normal. That's not what all the indicators are pointing to. Not at all. So anything you want to add to this real quick, Erica? No, not
no,
Meg.
Go ahead.
Hold on.
Go ahead. No,
Eric. Erica,
no, that's
talk to us
intro.
About, talk to me real quick about what else there is about this virus that we don't want to see people get. This is important. Just anything
well,
you want to add
it
that
does,
I missed.
It does a lot of damage, inflammatory type damage. And, you know, some people get over it. But even the mild cases, they can see on the brain scans that they've done on deceased who have died of other causes. They didn't die of COVID. They died from automobile accidents and what have you, but they had a history of COVID that, you
sure.
know, apparently didn't land them in the hospital. But nevertheless, they could see distinct changes in their brains from having had, presumably, this infection.
Exactly. A lot of people have had COVID multiple times, not just once. And I don't know what happens after you've had it three or four times. Maybe it compounds its seriousness within the human biophysiology. Maybe it doesn't, but it does seem to. At any rate, let's go to Meg now. Thanks for standing by there, Meg. Tell us your story, and we'll kind of jump in and push this back and forth and see where it goes. It's quite an horrific story. So go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like my whole life I had been kind of dealing with health issues. And so with the birth of my first son, I discovered that I had chronic Lyme disease. And then, you know, so that led to numerous things like POTS, adrenal failure, you know, a lot of things over a span of like, you know, 12 years. And then by the time I had my last son, it was the second time I got COVID when I was, you know, I had it right when it all first came out, and
right.
I was really sick. And then during my pregnancy, I had it, and I was about maybe halfway along. And after that, I just didn't feel right. I just never recovered. I had a lot of swelling, a lot of fluid retention. I started having such bad heart palpitations that I couldn't drive anymore because it scared me. And the doctor said everything was normal. They never checked.
Let me say something. First of all, I want to commend you for taking yourself off the road when you knew you weren't 100%. Most people wouldn't do that. They'll keep driving. And yeah. There have been many accidents of people doing that, and others have died and paid terrible prices for that. So that speaks very highly of your character and integrity. Good job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, let me ask one other quick question. You say you were diagnosed with Lyme, and you suffered with it for 12 years, and one of the symptoms you had to deal with was POTS and so forth. That's a long haul for Lyme. How were you diagnosed with Lyme? How did that work? Just a simple blood test, or was there some long-term thing?
I got Western blot, but then there was a study that was going on, and I had by this point found a naturopath because I had, you know, all these symptoms and I was trying to figure it out, and she hooked me up with a study, and it was called the iSpot, and I don't think that they do it anymore, but it was different than the Western blot, which is very inaccurate typically for Lyme.
Yes.
And so they, I don't know, I hit a bunch of, you know, bands, of course, on the Western blot too, but the iSpot is what test, you know, they had diagnosed me with.
Okay.
And then I had a specialist in Vancouver, Washington, and he said that I was born with it, and then I had my family tested.
Really?
It went back 4 generations.
Mm-hmm. Born with Lyme? How common is this, Erica?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have not heard of this before.
Oh, yeah. You can be born with Lyme. Yep.
And it can stay latent for many years and then pop up when you're a young adult kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I had the epidural, and that's what they say, it lays dormant in your spinal fluid. So when I had the epidural with my first son, it just, I guess, kind of got released. Or that's how someone explained it to me.
All right.
And it was a trauma to your body. So Lyme can lay dormant until there's a trauma. I guess since, you know, with like breastfeeding and you're sharing the same blood, so they say it can be passed.
Understood.
My understanding.
Okay, very good. I don't hear too many stories about people born with it. They usually get bitten, you know, the traditional mechanism. And anyway, okay. All right, go ahead. We're with you. So carry on from there.
Yeah,
your second
son,
and you were having problems with a pregnancy, it sounds like.
Yeah, and this is actually my third pregnancy. So the second one went fairly well, except they said by that point I was in adrenal failure and I had to have the epidural, which I fought them on it. I, you know, unfortunately didn't stick to my guns and I got it, and my heart rate dropped into the 20s, which they said was fine. But then they sent me
home. Wait.
Yeah.
Your heart rate, after you got the epidural in your spinal column, your heart rate dropped it in the 20s? 20 beats per minute on average. Erica, isn't that a bit low?
Yeah, 20 to 30, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's wow.
All right. Go ahead, Meg. All right.
So when I got up to 45 beats per minute, they sent me home, and then I was, like, blacking out. And my naturopath sent something over, and it, you know, fixed my heart rate within a day. But that was, not ideal having that going on. So that was the second pregnancy. And then the third one, like I said, I had gotten COVID, and they said everything's fine and normal still. And I requested a heart monitor, and they didn't get me one. So then I just struggled through the rest of the pregnancy. And then I this time knew, and I was very strong in my conviction with the no epidural. So I had a natural birth in the hospital, and everything went fine. And then I was home for 7 days, and then I was home alone with the baby. And at that point, I started having, you know, really intense chest pains, and I was sweating, and something's wrong. And I had learned throughout the years in the health struggles to listen to my body. So I went and got my blood pressure monitor and checked, and my normally low blood pressure was through the roof, and I was like, okay, you know, something, clearly this is not a panic attack or anxiety, something is really wrong. So
How high was it? My husband happened to call.
Uh-huh. It was, I mean, I remember like 180, 185 over 90 to 100.
And normally...
And usually I run 100 over 80, or I mean 100 over 60.
Yeah, you must have been almost dizzy, I would imagine.
I was. I remember crawling around on the floor. Like, I remember laying my baby down where he was safe, and then just crawling around. And... you know, things kind of went fast after that. But, yeah, my husband called, and I was like, you need to call 911. Mm-hmm. And so he, you know, called them, and they got here. And by the time they got here, my blood pressure and heart rate had kind of stabilized. And so no one thought it was that big of a deal. And so my husband's like, you know, you never have had me call 911. Like, this is a problem. And so they said, well, your baby can't go with you in the ambulance. And I'm like, well, he's 7 days old. I'm not going to leave him home alone. So my husband drove me in to the hospital, and they were, the first EKG was a little off, they said. And so they kept me and did another EKG, which they said was normal. But they wanted to keep me overnight just because of the heart condition or a heart, you know, I went in because of a heart thing. And so the next day they did a, they wanted to do a heart cath on me, and I was really glad that
what was that?
It's called a heart cath, like a heart catheter, where they stick a camera up your arm.
I thought you said tap.
Yep.
I got it. Cath. Okay.
Yep. And so, but it was very interesting. Nothing was like, and they knew I was a new mom because I had my infant there with me. I was nursing him. I was, you know, like all the things. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, hey, this is, you know, a large possibility. At one point, the ER, or I mean, the heart doctor did come in and the next morning and say, hey, you know, you could have a small tear. We should really do this heart cath, because I was just going to go home. So I was so thankful that he really encouraged me to do that. And he said, you just want peace of mind. And so no one thought it was a big deal still. So I got, you know, wheeled back, and then they discovered I had, you know, one small tear and one massive tear that was blocking off the left side of my heart. And so at that point, Meg, pardon me, tear
in what part of your heart? Which part?
Yeah.
What were the tears?
Coronary artery. Yeah, so it's coronary artery dissection was what it was. And mine was unfortunately in the wrong...
Go ahead.
So they don't... Mine was in the wrong spot, if you want to say that, because a lot of women, unbeknownst to them, have this happen... typically postpartum.
Is this a factor of strain in childbirth and the physical trauma? Okay.
Right. Yes, it can be. And they'll have slight ones, and you just think you're suffering from postpartum recovery and healing. Hmm. But a nurse told me that the cases of this since COVID has been introduced have been through the roof. And the cases even that they've seen here, where I, you know, am from a smaller area, have just been significant.
Well, let me pause just for a second. Erica, we've had a lot of data on arterial damage from COVID, maybe the infection, but certainly the shots, where these they actually begin to fall apart. They're just torn, I guess is the word. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, the virus does infect the endothelium, you know, the lining of the blood vessels, and, you know, it can weaken them after a point.
Sure.
So that they're prone to rupture.
Now, that's crazy. All right, so you're now faced with if it were me, I would have been quite frightened. Go ahead. All right.
Yeah, I was. But I just remember arguing with them, you know, at the table. I said, this, you know, this isn't happening. This isn't real. And the doctor, you know, he was very kind. And I remember him holding my hand and saying, this is real, but I'm going to make sure that you're okay. And
He,
you know, gave me anesthesia against, you know, I was fighting that too. And then that was all I remember. And they life-flighted me to a bigger town where I had open heart surgery with, and then they put a balloon pump in, and that failed. It wasn't strong enough. So then I had another open heart surgery the next day, and they put a device in that pumped my heart for me. And then they had to lifesite me to Salt Lake, which is a lot bigger area than where I'm from. And so I spent a few months down there, and that's kind of where a lot of the things happened that were kind of unfortunate, I guess, as far as my healing and recovery and, dealing with a larger hospital. There was a lot of great people, but there was a lot of people that made it kind of tough, when you're making life and death decisions.
We've heard many stories. So go ahead and share some of those examples. We don't want to knock the good people, but we certainly want to highlight the bad people. They need to be watched carefully and look. You have to be on the lookout all the time for sub-professional care. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize my 12 years before all of this really built up my knowledge and my confidence, and I was so thankful because my husband's a quiet man, but when I was in my had me in an induced coma, and he took over, and he had been right beside me, learning all these things throughout the years. And so him and my dad both never left my side, and they were advocating for me, for all the things that, I would want or, should have. And I remember my husband telling me, he said, "Meg, I don't know how to tell you this, but you have to have blood transfusion." And he said, "I asked them for unvaccinated blood, and they said there's no way that they could trace that, and I had no choice, and either I would die or I needed to have, the blood." And so he said, "I'm really sorry, but, to get blood,
if I might, who told you you needed a blood transfusion, and why?"
During my open heart surgery, I lost so much blood. I actually coded twice, and most of it was, from blood loss. Large tear, so much blood.
Did they try to suture that tear up at any point?
Yeah, I think they did, and I think it, I can't remember, but I think they did, and I think it maybe tore again, or I don't know, I don't remember.
All right, well, you've told us.
I don't remember what my husband had said.
This is a horror.
Oh, what they did? They put a blood vessel from my leg into my heart. That's how they patched it up.
Replaced it.
Yeah, they patched it. But I had had two, heart attacks by that point from the lack of blood flow to my heart. So my heart is, still very damaged. That was one thing that was really mind-blowing to us, because my husband donates blood, and they always ask him if he's vaccinated from COVID, and he always says no. So he said, "I know that they keep track, but where does that information go, and why is it not getting, to the patients? Like, how come you can't find out if this blood is vaccinated or not?" So that was something that was really upsetting to us. And then I was needing a heart transplant.
Whoa, hold on, all right, you had the transfusion, and you have no idea of the status of the blood in terms of COVID and spike and all that. All right, how many units did you have to take? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know why the 6 sounds right. I mean, that could be.
6
maybe.
Sounds like you needed a lot of blood, that's for sure.
I know I had to have it twice, but I want to say maybe 6.
All right. Okay. And then you actually coded, and for those of you out there who don't know, that means she died. She's dead, and they brought her back.
Yeah. Yeah, a few times I did that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I know my husband said that I had really good care and doctors, and actually a friend from when I was little, she didn't know it was me at first, but she was my lead nurse during those surgeries. And my husband said he just knew once she figured out it was me that I was in good hands, and they did. Took very good care of me. So that was really good. It was a good, that was a bright spot. And then, when I got to Salt Lake, they had determined, because I think my heart was only functioning at 10% maybe, at that point.
You're still alive with 10% heart function. That is a miracle to me in and of itself.
It was, yes. I had many, many miracles, and I'm decided that I'm kind of tougher than I thought I was also. But it was a lot of miracles, a lot of prayer, and a lot of people, behind me.
All right. The doctors come to you and they say, you need a new heart. You need a heart transplant. We can't save this heart. You've had three kids. It's torn up. What is the word, Erica? They transfer, transect, I don't know, a new vein from the leg into the heart? What's the word? There's a word for it. Anyway, okay. So they put you through all of this. Your heart's working at 10%. You've got three kids and a husband and a life, and you're hanging on by a thread. It's almost like you're on borrowed time. When they told you heart transplant, where does it go from there? What happens next?
I, immediately didn't want that because I had done a lot of studying on cellular energy and all that stuff. And I remember reading somewhere where someone got a heart transplant and their personality of the person whose heart it was came through to the new person.
Yes. And it doesn't mean, it's not just the heart, it's any major organ.
No. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You pick up some of the personality of the person who had that organ. That sounds crazy, but that's what the.
I hope they could give me a sweetheart because I would say I'm a bit spicy. So maybe they'll give me a really sweetheart, right? But there was something I knew I didn't want, and I really, really didn't want it. And then hearing and realizing all of the drugs that you have to be on for the rest of your life, all the aftercare.
That's right.
That was.
So you wanted to save your heart, and that was your goal. You were going to save your own heart. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So your heart is working between 10 and 20%. That's it. That's crazy. Go ahead.
Yeah. But I remember asking them, like, is there anything you can do? Can I bring my red lights? Can I bring, anything? My molecular hydrogen inhalation machine, anything. And they said no. It was during COVID. I couldn't even bring my family in. My baby I hadn't seen. My two other kids I hadn't seen. And so I think that was breaking my heart even more than, more than anything. And
this has gone on for several months, Meg? Now, several months?
That was only a few, by this point, it was, a few weeks when I came out of the coma. They woke me up out of the coma. Talking to this. So I remember a doctor, his wife had just had a baby, and he said, if you get your family here, I'll sneak your kids in the back door. Like, okay, done deal.
Nice.
So, he got them in, and my heart actually did the best it ever did when I was down there, when I was holding my baby and when I'd just seen my other kid. So that was, he knew that, too. It was really amazing. He said, look at the monitors. He said, your heart's not been this stable yet. And so I hope it was an eye-opener for him, and I hope he told others, because I feel like it's that lack of care that kills people, really. There was no other alternative thing they would do, even, not letting you hold your new baby when that's all that a mother's heart really needs or wants. Back to the heart transplant, we started really getting into deep discussions. They said I wouldn't live without it. And they started sending in teams of people, and they called them the suit and ties. And they weren't doctors. They were more like administration. And they were coming in, talking with the rules, and then they discovered I wasn't vaccinated against COVID. And that lit everybody up. And so they said, well, you need all four vaccines before we give you this heart. And I said, I won't get the vaccines. And so it started this, I would say, fight, basically, back and forth, where they would send people in and they'd discuss it. And I remember... it wasn't only the four vaccines. I needed to have every single vaccine up to date. So,
they would have killed you. That would have been fatal. They would have killed you. That would have been the end. Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm not a seer or a prophet, but it's obvious. Yeah. Four.
Yes.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
They wanted me to have all four.
This is really astonishing.
Yeah.
And they were sending people into the room to work you over mentally and psychologically to try to break you down. Is that what was going on?
that's, I mean, how it felt. I mean, there were some people you could tell, like, there was a doctor that kept fighting for me and would go to these people and say, can we compromise? Can we do something different? His hands were tied. All of their hands were tied, you know, except these student ties. And I remember just being so thankful that my dad and my husband were on the same page, because here I am basically dying, you know, and trying to fight yes. these people. And so my dad and husband took care of a lot of it. And I just remember looking at a doctor and I said, so if I don't get these shots, I can't have a heart transplant. And he said, yep. And I said, so you would let me die? And he said, well, I mean, if you want to say it that way, you can't have a heart transplant without the shots. And so I said, so you would let me die? And
who is this? You know, this subhuman swine? I people like that, they think they're gods. I just, they're horrible. And they're all over the place. There are a lot of them like that.
That was tough, you know, realizing. And I think that one that I asked was a doctor. And I think it made him realize probably how little control he has. Here he's trying to help people, yet he has to let his patients die if they don't agree to every rule. And those aren't the only rules. It was, you have to be on the birth control pill. If you somehow still get pregnant, you have to have an abortion. And you have to sign your life away for 1 year to these people because of their statistics. And we had a nurse pull us aside, and I remember her saying that. She said, read the fine print. Don't sign it. You're signing your life away. And that was a really big shock to us, I guess, realizing all of the rules. And then we had a team of people coming in because I said, no, I'm not doing the vaccines. I'm not doing the birth control pill. I'm not doing any of these things. Then we would have the whole OB team coming in. You need to be on the pill. You have to. And I was like, oh my goodness. It was these teams that would just come in day after day after day.
May I ask, Meg, what kind of hospital was this? Is it just a general public hospital, or was this a religiously run hospital? Who was running this?
No, it was a university. Yep.
Okay.
It was a university.
Kind of like a teaching hospital then. All right.
Yeah, it was. Yep. And so that was another thing. You know, sometimes we had some really amazing doctors, and we had a few, I don't know,
quacks.
You call them fellows maybe, that were coming in and they're training, and they really wanted to tell you what to do. And
what a terrible attitude for a student doctor to have.
Yes.
That they feel like they have to lord it over the patient. Tell them what's going to happen, what's not going to happen. That's the wrong attitude. That's not it at all. That's bad.
No. Yeah. It was tough. Then, you know, it was, I don't want to, you know, my intention isn't to demean or portray the whole medical industry as bad. There are some wonderful, wonderful doctors, but the system is bad.
Say,
and it's
Meg,
not ran
it's
by
the second leading cause
of
death of people in America. Medicine.
Yep. It's and I can see why. You know, there was, you know, like I said, no, their food was so bad. I remember my husband said, you know, you aren't eating this. I'm going to go out and get you better food because you can't heal this way. And
no.
So he would do that. And so, you know, you have this red jello, and, you know, that's what they're feeding you. And they're, you know, injecting who knows what. And that's what, you know, I feel like you hardly had a say. And once I was, you know, not intubated anymore, and, you know, my husband and my dad were not allowed to spend the night. And so I always fear that night, what are they doing when my dad and my husband leave? And they even let them stay later, but it was like 10 o'clock they had to be gone, and they couldn't come back until 6 a.m.
Well, it sounds
all of you
were aware of the danger of them coming along and just going right into your IV and giving you the shots.
Mm-hmm.
They could have done that. We've heard stories like that.
I asked every single thing, you know, what is that, you know, and there were some nurses that we became friends. And so they would, you know, they would tell me things. And one nurse said, Megan, you're deemed uncompliant. And I didn't know what that meant. And she said, well, do you see all of the, you know, police that come here and they're standing by people's rooms and they're escorting people out? She said those patients are deemed not compliant or uncompliant also.
And so they call the cops.
Why would I be?
Great. Great.
Yeah. So, and I never had them called on me, but I believe it was me refusing the vaccine is why mm-hmm. I was not compliant or uncompliant.
Got it.
So that was a really interesting kind of twist in all of this.
Meg, your heart is somehow continuing to serve you. It's there. You've got children. You're bonded to your children and your family. Your heart is hanging on.
Yep.
What happened next when you said no transplant, no vax, no birth control pills? What happened with your heart?
Yep.
How did that go? You mentioned red light, and we've talked about red light therapy on this program before a number of times. Erica knows quite a bit about it. So tell us about that angle and what happened.
Yeah, so I had still at this point a pump in my heart that was pumping for my heart. And they said it was getting dangerous because it was only supposed to be in for a few days, and it was weeks and maybe a month later, or I can't remember the timeline, but a long time later. So they said, we're going to take it out, and either you're going to live or you're going to die. And I'm like, okay, well, we're going to pray a novena, which is a 9-day intensive prayer, and it's going to end. It ended up ending on the day that I needed to have my surgery. And so I had another miracle, and they pulled it out, and my heart, I think, was now at 22% functioning by this point. And I did okay, and then it just kept climbing really slow. But they sent me home, I think I was only functioning at 25%, and they said, we've done with you what we can, basically. And so I went home and got lifelighted back a week later. And then the second time
Megan, you went home, and then you had to go back to the hospital a week later? Because of the output of your heart still being so poor.
Yeah, and no one had told me. There was a miscommunication. So I didn't know about the no sodium, the no salt diet. And my heart is pumping so inefficiently that you fill up with fluid and your heart fills up, like all this stuff. So I couldn't breathe anymore. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And no one had told us that there was, I was forgotten about because I had my surgery in one place and, was lifelike again to that second place. And
so three different hospitals.
I had just
all
got,
together.
The ball got dropped. Yeah.
Got it.
Yep. So the second time we went back, they, figured out that I wasn't told any of these things. And then I, had an extremely strict diet that I followed when I got home. And I started using my red light and I started using my molecular hydrogen machine. And those two things, intensified my healing, and the doctors were blown away. And, I was on such a low dose of their medicine that they knew, and I knew that it wasn't the medicine doing anything. It was, my extra things that I was doing.
Sure. The red lights, were you using something like it's like a rectangular pad, maybe 6 inches by 14 inches. It's a rectangle. It's got red squares in it, little red lights. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yep.
What is it?
Yeah, I started out, I actually made kind of a homemade red bed. So mine, I bought an old tanning bed, and I put the, red lights in that tanning bed and created my own red bed. So I used that for a while, and then I ended up buying the smaller panels. I would say one is probably like 3 feet, and the other is, 1 or 2 feet. And so, And
put that around your chest, so to speak, or just across your chest?
So I would sit in front of it, because mine are panels that stand up. So I would sit in front of it every day. And I would just let that light shine on, onto my heart. And it gives you energy, and it heals things on the cellular level. So I did that also while taking beef heart, because if you take beef heart, it's supposed to really boost the effects of red light and vice versa.
So
it's in a, you can get it dehydrated, and you have to make sure it's from grass-fed, grass-finished cattle.
Yes, of course.
Erica, let me bring Erica in here.
Erica, we've talked about this on the air, and the red lights somehow, among other things, trigger the mitochondria to perform much better than they were. What else do the red lights do?
Well, so they're renowned for bringing down inflammation, and that allows more oxygen to get into the cell to help it heal. But also, it puts the body into a parasympathetic state as opposed to sympathetic dominance. When you're in sympathetic dominance, that's fight or flight, and no healing is going to occur when you're in a sympathetic dominant state. So the red light helps you get back into a parasympathetic state, which is also known as rest and digest, and that's when real healing can occur. So it really is a remarkable, easily accessible technology that people can use. And it's an antidote to blue light. And we are utterly saturated in blue light, which, you know, you're supposed to have some blue light during the day, but we're literally with computer screens and TVs and monitors, we're just bathed in it, and it's really, really toxic. And red light can counteract a lot of the toxicity from blue light.
Now, Eric and I have no interest in any of these companies, but we both happen to be fans of red light therapy, and I have one. It's got to be 8 by 20, something like that. It's a pad. It's a little pack that about the size of a cigarette pack. That's the battery, and on the other side of it, there are row after row of little square red lights. And I use this sometimes if you get lower back pain, you ache, and you put this on. I've got one for my knee as well, and they really do make a difference. It's not a scam. It's not a joke. The one I have is called, and again, I've no interest in the company at all. It's called Life Pro, LifePro. You can find it in Amazon, I'm sure. But it's a great thing. If you get the pad, you can use it all over the place. Some people actually use it on their heads at night because it will stimulate the hair follicles, the cells that are involved with growing hair. And I wouldn't be surprised if it helped people stave off baldness and maybe bring back hair that is in state. A lot of people never massage their scalp. They just use a comb and they leave it. They just don't do anything. These lights can do a lot. And it's something you all want to look into. Just examine it and take a look. You have to make the decision on that. What else, Erica?
Some people ask if you can just get, like, the chicken lamp. You know, the $10 or $12 chicken lamp from Lowe's
a bulb,
or Home
a red
Depot.
Bulb. Yeah.
Those are good. The thing though, if you go with a strictly therapeutic type of red light, you're going to get the frequencies that target the mitochondria. And that's where the real magic happens. When you're getting the chicken lamp, the red infrared lamps, heat lamps, you're getting some of those frequencies, but you're also getting a whole lot of heat. And consequently, not that much of the frequencies that are needed to stimulate the mitochondria can get at the mitochondria because the heat ends up heating up the water in your cells, and it's too hot. So that's why you'd want to go with a red light device that has, I believe the frequencies are in the 600, mid-600s, and the mid-800s.
Six to eight, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I again
yeah,
the one I have.
The mitochondria.
People are going to ask which one. It's the one I have is Life Pro, very highly spoken of in the reviews. You can take a look. There are others out there that are probably just as good. I don't know, but this one is just fine for me. Megan also mentioned, Erica, that she has a hydrogen water, and we'll call it an enhancer for water. What do the hydrogen units do for water, and how could that have helped her, in your view?
I think she's referring to the inhaled, the gas.
Okay.
And that's also very, very therapeutic because it really reduces the oxidative stress. Hydrogen is the tiniest molecule that can perfuse every compartment in the body. It goes everywhere and can really help with free radical damage, oxidative stress and free radical damage.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, Megan, let's go back to you. We have about 8 minutes left, so let's go ahead and bring us up to date where you are now.
Yeah, so now my heart is functioning around 35%. And a normal, I should state this, a normal person's heart functions on the low end, like 55%. So 55 to 70%. So I'm at 35. Okay. And, you know, I continue to use my red lights, my molecular hydrogen, you know, inhalation machine. And I have a light beam generator. I use that for my lymph. And I'm checking into next because the doctors kind of said you've exceeded our expectations. We don't know, you know, how to really help you from here. Basically,
they didn't know what to do. They didn't. This is not in their textbooks. No.
So, and I have the doctor that received me at the second place. Him and I have a great relationship, and he is at least open to my. Alternative healing, if that's what you want to call it. And he will, you know, help me research it and figure out and make sure, you know, with what I had got going on that, you know, that he thinks it's safe. And I'll tell him the research I've done. So that's been really nice to have, you know, a Western medicine doctor, but someone who really,
sure,
you know,
very
is
encouraging
to,
yeah, it's, no,
yeah.
Bravo to that gentleman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I now am looking at MSC stem cells in Panama and hoping that's maybe something in my future because they say that can regenerate heart cells. So that's kind of where I'm at, is doing my things and also always keeping an open mind and open eyes to things.
See,
that might be out there.
That sounds exactly the opposite of what many of these doctors do. They don't have an open mind. They think they have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
All the answers are in the protocols
mm-hmm.
they're taught. And many of them are afraid to step mm-hmm. outside of any boundaries that the AMA insists they follow. Have you gone for stem cells yet, or you're planning to maybe do that, go to Panama for it?
Yeah, I'm still talking back and forth with the institute there, and it sounds really promising. I just want to make sure that that's the right move for me.
Would it be your own stem cells, or would they be donor stem cells?
It's not. It's very interesting, which is why I'm still kind of on the fence. But they use a stem cell called Wharton's jelly. It's from umbilical cord, so it's a healthy pregnancy.
Yes.
You know, healthy baby. There's a
right.
ton of testing. The mother donates that umbilical cord, and then they use what they're called golden cells, which are ones that have the most potency and are perfect, basically.
Right.
And everyone has MSCs in them, so your body can't reject them, really. So that's what
right.
it is.
We're running short on time. There's another type of stem cells that come from the individual, and I believe they're injected...
Mm-hmm.
Into the hip bone, somehow into the hip, into the marrow, something like that. And that there's a clinic in Chicago that offers that. You've probably come across this idea already.
Well, you know something.
Yeah, so they're...
Go ahead, Erica.
Yeah, the fact that you were pregnant may have been an influencing factor on your survival because your baby shared his stem cells with you.
Mm. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Look that up. That's.
Yeah, that's
I've got research on that, and yeah, and those stem cells they stay with you for a while. So
right.
Yeah, I'll send you some article on that.
I would love that. Thank you. Yeah, that's really interesting. Something I have not honestly thought about yet. So thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You have a special bond with that baby.
Yeah.
I do, and he is just such a bright light, such a joy.
Well, so are you. Don't forget that. You're the light around which they're orbiting, I'm sure. If you want to check into this other stem cell format, I can get you some. I don't know much about it, but a friend of mine, Dick Allgaier, and all of you know who Dick is, he's had it. He went to Korea for it. It's a very new, safe, because it comes from the actual person who's going to receive the stem cell. It's their own stem cell stock, so to speak. But I can get you that information, so you can look in.
That would be great. Thank you. I'd really appreciate that.
You bet. We'll get that to you. So right now, you're back at home. How much are you able to do by way of being the mom of the kids and help being the heart of the household. What are you able to do now?
You know, I've had people say that didn't know before. You know, they said, I would never know that you had something happen like that. But
wow.
I can't, like, I could never go out and go for a jog or ride a bike or, but I, we ranch. We have, we raise grass-fed, grass-finished cattle. And I can go out on the ranch, but I'm now, instead of a horse, I'm in the buggy. So I can drive around and do those sorts of things. I just, I can be out all day. I don't have to take a nap. You know, I can do those sorts of things. But I know I'm not. I'm not normal, and I have to really push myself to keep up with three boys who are homeschooled. And like I said, we're on the ranch a lot.
Three boys, you're homeschooling too. Wow. I definitely nominate you for Mother of the Year. That this is amazing to hear. That shows how much a mother can do. Well, great. Megan, we have to go. Thank you for sharing all of that. And everyone, I'm sure,
thank
listening
you so
wishes
much.
You the very best. We'll send some material your way as well that you can consider. And and let us know. I'm sure you can. Let us know how you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Okay,
you
thanks, Megan.
Thanks, Erica.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's a... that's a knockout of a story.
Sure is.
You know, if it had been anyone else with her catastrophic heart problems, they wouldn't have made it. I don't believe it.
No,
they would have died.
You know, got some divine protection.
That's right. Death by medicine is bad enough. When you get something like this where these doctors think they know it all, they don't know it all. They don't know about red lights. They don't even know about Allison C.
I'm still processing this, you know, wanting to give her, you know, at least four COVID shots and then whatever vaccines
she
was supposedly
missing.
She
made her stand. She's smart. She was well-informed, and she stood on it.
You know, that's...
why should you have to fight like that?
Just politics and interfering with somebody's medical care. There's no rationale for that.
No. That's insane. She's one principled, strong human being, and what a great family around her as well, and her dad, husband.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a story.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about stem cells from umbilical cords from people you don't know. The other kind seemed to be much more the kind Dick Allgaier had and his wife had. I think that's maybe
you know,
more.
I'm not sure how long those stem cells from a pregnancy last. I'm trying to look that up, but I'll find the research on it. And there were people who were vax injured that had damaged hearts, women who got pregnant, and the stem cells that come from that pregnancy will go to the mother's body and heal whatever organs are damaged.
That's nature working at its most brilliant, isn't it? Think about it. Keeping the mother healthy with stem cells.
Yep. So she may not actually need a transplant at this point. She's got her own. But I'll look for that research.
Yeah, I'll get the information on the type that Dick had. And he had to go all the way to Korea to get it. Very interesting. But there is a clinic
that's
here.
A big thing. It was a big thing. I think they've moved on now to things like exosomes more so than stem cells. Stem cells sometimes have problems.
Right. I know. Yeah. Well, okay. There's a look at what all of us need to be prepared to do if we're laid low with some kind of unexpected medical crisis. You have to be willing to stand up for your beliefs and those around you and fight. And that's not the way it should be. If you're going into a hospital, you shouldn't have to fight. You should be there to heal. But you have to be prepared to stand for yourself.
Now, I'm guessing this all took place maybe 2 years ago. And I wonder, are they still holding people to these ridiculous...
Sure. They're not going to change their policies. Highly unlikely if somebody complains and moans about them.
I don't know what the status is on. I mean, they're certainly still giving you know, contaminated blood to people, that's, you know, hasn't been negotiated or renegotiated.
Yeah.
I don't know what the status is for, you know, if you need a transplant, you have to be all shot up to receive a diseased heart.
Isn't that not just the COVID, terrible COVID injections, but all the other vaccines that she was deficient in or not up to speed on?
But say, I mean,
they would have killed her with the shots.
Well, and she might have received a spiked heart.
Easy.
And then, you know, died from that.
Organ
transplants. No, she made the right choice. There's no question.
She did. She certainly did. Organ transplants are really, really dangerous.
Yeah.
Not that they can't be dealt with in terms of organ rejection, but that the donor
Where's it coming from?
It's not healthy.
If everybody's shot up these days, right?
Exactly. Exactly right. All right. Well, I certainly hope that we hope that all of you learned from that a little bit. You can't go in there and trust that you're going to get the best and most intelligent medical care. You cannot. You can't. It's sad. No matter how well-meaning some are, they're being taught wrong. There's that, too. And that was a teaching hospital.
Yeah, so could be part of an experiment.
Easy. It sounds like if you're being fed red Jell-O as one of the primaries, good luck with that.
Jell-O.
don't even go there. Well, okay, partner. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay, thanks,
Great
Jeff.
Job. All right.
You too. All right. Good night, everyone.
Okay, we'll pause and we will come right back with hour number 3 for you in just a few minutes.